Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Cleveland Cavaliers are coming off a win over the Brooklyn Nets where Alec Burks gets the game-winning dunk with just 3 seconds left. Tristan Thompson with a nice defensive stop over Spencer Dinwiddie. Dinwiddie not hitting game-winning shots when the Cavs...
I was so sure that shot was going in, man.
Yeah, I think the Cavs have to own the Nets pick in order for him to hit every single game-winning shot. but no, he didn't hit this one. Big, big stop from Tristan, defending that perfectly, and the Cavs get back in the win column. Dejected voice you hear is Carter Rodriguez, and the wounds of Spencer Dinwiddie are still kind of fresh, eh?
I don't know why I'm dejected. Jeez.
No. You sounded... I heard in your voice the pain of every single game winner he hit last season.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not going to offer much else other than that?
Well, here's the thing, Justin. I had the cough. Still kind of do. I was trying to buy myself some time with that so I could mute, unmute, cough, and then unmute. But thanks for calling me out.
Yeah, no problem. Please mute and clear your throat, because right now you're going full Stu Gotts with this, right? And it's but yeah.
All right, I'm back. Those tortilla chips, they'll get you.
It was an interesting weekend, though, for the Cavs. Loss against the Celtics and Raptors. Kind of saw that coming from a mile away. Even without Kyle Lowry playing for Toronto, still a really good team. They still have Kawhi Leonard, and just didn't exactly go as planned, but they competed really well against Toronto. George Hill made his return to the starting lineup. So I think we can both say that we were right there, because Rodney Hood hasn't been removed from the starting lineup, but we are finally getting to see Hill and Sexton playing together.
Yeah, and I mean, this is kind of a nice bone to throw Hill's way, you know, because it is a little awkward to take this vet that's making $20 million this year and just say, yeah, you're not starting anymore. Like, that is hard no matter who you are. Now, when Kevin Love gets back, I don't really know what to do. I mean, I would bench Hood because I hate Hood, but it doesn't appear that the Cavs feel that way.
I think there's a realistic... I think there's a realistic chance that George Hill isn't on the team at that point.
That's a great point. I mean, Love's not supposed to be back until the new year, right?
Yeah, until, like, not right at the start of January. I think we might be, like, a week in there. And at that point, I think teams will have assessed, hey, we need help. We need either a point guard or we need a guard off the bench that's going to help us. Yeah. And I think adding Hill is going to be a necessity for some of these teams. There's just not a lot of guys, as we mentioned on last week's podcast, there isn't a lot of teams that are looking to sell right now. So I think Hill is going to become a more and more attractive piece as time goes on. So hopefully we don't have to kind of answer that question and figure out who to remove. That decision.
What do you think they'll do if they keep Hill through the deadline?
I think what you have assessed is right, and they would move Hill to the bench at that point and keep Rodney Hood. I think they're, even though he's not necessarily playing well, I think they are kind of committed to keeping him in the starting lineup and kind of trying to play up his value, because I do think ultimately they're going to try to move him at the deadline and combine him with the J.R. Smith or one of, I guess if George Hill is still there with him as well. I don't think they're going to have an issue getting Rodney Hood to consent to being traded. So I do think that they're going to continue to try to showcase him as much as possible.
That's fair. Speaking of trades, you know who I'm going to miss once the Cavs probably trade him in 2 months is Alec Burks. He's actually been pretty fun to watch so far.
Yeah, he's kind of like a less depressing version of Rodney Hood. I don't know what they do in Utah to tell every single guard that you need to do dribble handoffs and shoot from mid-range, but he's more athletic, he's aggressive, he's assertive. It's a better version of the Rodney Hood experience, in my opinion. And obviously, the game-winning dunk was pretty exciting. That was a more athletic move than we've seen from basically any non-LeBron Cavs wing in a long time.
Yeah, it was just a really, really nice play. I just kind of couldn't believe he had enough burst to, you know, had enough, like, gas left in the tank on that drive to kind of explode towards the rim, but he did. You know, it's funny. He hasn't been super efficient. I don't think he shot better than 39% in a game yet with the Cavs. But the three-pointer has not really been going. That he's a much better shooter than he's shown. He's still getting into rhythm. And, like, more than anything, like, he's just kind of involved in a way that, you know, I think Andy Bailey, who was telling us, like, you know, like, he's not Rodney. He's not just going to disappear from games. Like, he has other flaws, but it's not a passivity issue.
What I like, and I think what you're getting at there, too, is that what he does seems to go kind of within the flow of the team, and it seems to be working towards something, whereas a Rodney Hood possession feels like, okay, this is Rodney Hood possession. He's going to take a shot. He's not going to get anyone else involved. The ball isn't moving, and this is just kind of one of our design plays for him.
Yeah, like, and maybe this is just, you know, it's fun to see a new face, and his flaws
that could definitely be a part of it.
And his flaws will become more obvious, and I would argue that it's more probable that that's the case. But he was well-liked by that fan base, and you would imagine it's for a reason. I always like to talk about players who are shorter than in real life than they're listed, like, or at least like shorter than I thought they'd be. Like, yeah. Zach LaVine's on the all shorter than I thought he was going to be team. That dude's like 6'3.5" tops.
Really?
Oh yeah. When I covered a Cavs Bulls game last year, and he walked by me in the hallway right outside of media, and I was like, oh shit, that you? Like, he's not very tall. Burks is on team, seems a little bit taller than he is when he's on the court. Like, you see 6'6" listed. He just seems like he's got a little more size to him. I would be interested in seeing his wingspan because he kind of is able to create interesting angles. He's got this kind of herky-jerky game off the dribble that seems to throw people out of rhythm. He's been pretty fun to watch. I'm not saying that he's like the savior for the team. I've seen a lot of people joking that he's this year's Baron Davis, which is besmirches Baron Davis's contributions to that Cavs team.
Yeah, I mean, Baron Davis was here for years. You have to respect him. If he ever did get his jersey retired, or if he ever got into the Basketball Hall of Fame, he's going in as a Cleveland Cavalier.
Ever since I found out that Jacob Greenberg, big friend of the pod, Warriors fan, gets annoyed by how much Cavs fans love Baron Davis because of his half season with us, I mention him with just a little bit more relish. I actually feel that way, but now I have someone to annoy while I'm doing it.
Right. And I think the point you made about Alec Burks kind of being a fresh face is a good one, because him and Colin Sexton are basically the only guys that haven't let us down at a point where we needed them on this roster. Like, even Tristan, for how reliable he was in playoffs, like, he still had bad games. 2017 in the playoffs, he wasn't particularly good playing through injury. Rodney Hood has let us down. Jordan Clarkson has let us down. And I think some... Sad. Yeah, Alec Burks gets to come in with a fresh slate, and it's been an enjoyable experience. The other thing that's been interesting is with George Hill moving into the starting lineup, Larry Nance coming in off the bench as an energy guy. And while the box score stats don't really jump out to you, it feels like he's playing better. And I think both you and I have been critics of him throughout this season, and kind of been nervous about that contract he got. But this is the role that has always suited Nance the best, in my opinion.
Yeah, I just don't think that's a guy who is very much – his game's just not measured by box scores. Maybe that's, like, a stupid thing to say, but, like, I feel like you feel him when he's kind of – making these kind of deflections, kind of creating a little chaos. And he also has a significant splash plays. And I know those splash plays can get overrated because dumb people overrate them, but I think smart people kind of underrate them. Like, yeah, getting a block, leading the break, and then dishing and catching an oop. Like, that has a degree of sentimental value that I think people kind of underrate.
And also, it sticks. Like, I know, in terms of, like, player efficiency and things that we calculate and track, 2 points is 2 points. but how a defense reacts to you and the attention they pay to you changes when you have one of those highlight dunks. Like, you have gravity because of that athletic ability, and I think that that's something that isn't appropriately measured.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. He's really been kind of re-excelling in the dunker spot along the baseline.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's just a factor of the Cavs offense maybe finding its way just a little bit. But yeah, I've just been really pleased with the way he's kind of shown out. I just think it's really you're never going to see a Larry Nance box score. Like, I remember that first game after they traded for him, first couple, and he had like 18 and 13 or whatever, something like an outrageous line. And we were like, oh my God, this is the new future. And that's definitely not the case. I think we were wrong on that.
Yeah. But he had the one game against the Nuggets. I'll look it up, but I remember being the game where I was like, hey, this might be
this
like,
guy.
This feels sustainable.
Yeah. And
him playing the pick and roll with LeBron, like, LeBron in that situation, and I think he would have remained effective down the stretch if he hadn't pulled his hamstring, but like, LeBron can make guys that are borderline useless, like JaVale McGee, look good if you set good screens and you roll to the basket. On this team, obviously his role is going to be a lot different because there just isn't the same type of guys that will draw the attention and create those opportunities for him.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, Nance is currently leading the team in deflections per game. It's just 2.5, and that's not crazy, but it does show that he kind of does have his thumb on the pulse a little bit and is kind of creating that chaos. And he's been yamming it recently. So I know he's not great. I know that we've been a little disappointed by him. We were hoping for a little bit more out of him. But also, I mean, three-pointers looking a little more real. Come on. I'm just saying.
If you're going to highlight a part of his game that was kind of unexpected, I think it's his ability to move the ball, like handle the ball, pass. Like, his vision has been really, really impressive this season. The three-pointer, I know the form's like semi-decent, and like, it's not like he has any hitches. The ball doesn't miss like dramatically. He's not breaking backboards or anything like that, but that's just not something that I really need from him. Like, I don't think you're ever going to have that gravity there.
What if I told you Larry Nance shot 40% from three in November?
I would believe it. I think his percentage for the year is kind of mid-30s. Like, it would not surprise me if he shot well in November. But let's not turn into Celtics
fans. Just saying,
talk about a guy that takes a three every other game and then his percentage.
I'm just saying, on 1 3 a game, he's shooting 35%. You know what I actually do like about it, though? And I know you don't want to talk about it, but I want to.
Brandon Ingram numbers right there.
So deal with it. What I actually kind of like about it so far is not that just that he's willing to take them, he's kind of taking them right away. Like, he's kind of pulling with like a degree of confidence. It's not like this weird beat. I guess I'll take it. He is kind of firing away. And, you know, if he can get to a point where, you know, even if he's only taking one or two a game, if the defense does react even a little bit, that adds a little extra value that was otherwise not being there. So, you know, I don't ever think he's going to be a good three-point shooter, but if he gets to the point where if he hits a couple in a game and has a defender run at him because they're thinking about it for a split second, you know, I mean, Marcus Smart gets gravity, gets good looks off of gravity just because he pulls with such aggression and with such immediacy.
Yeah. To your point, it would be a game changer. It would be a big-time difference maker for him if that was something that the defense at least had to think about, right? And that's all you really want. You don't want him taking four shots a game from there. But
yeah, I just think the aggression and like, yeah, sometimes he'll wait and like kind of just like shrug and put one up. But for the most part, it's like he kind of catches it in the pocket and goes up with it with a degree of confidence. And that confidence actually is what matters. Like, that's why guys in the regular season run at Marcus Smart threes. For no fucking reason.
Right.
Oh, and shit, he's going up. I gotta go. Like, that matters. It does. And Marcus Smart's probably somehow worse at threes than Larry Nance.
You're not wrong. I think at some point when you're that willing to take shots and you can't shoot, it becomes a bit of a problem. That's the Lonzo Ball.
Want him to take like eight a game like Smart does sometimes. But
speaking of
there's
guys
a middle ground to be found.
Speaking of guys that aren't afraid to take shots, Colin Sexton has kind of had a bit of an up and down stretch after playing really well when he was first given the job in the starting lineup. I thought he played well against OKC. Tonight against Brooklyn, I thought was a better game than he had against Toronto. It was a little strange to see Larry Drew not play him down the stretch, going with Jordan Clarkson, Burks, Hood, and I think Jetty was out there along with Tristan. But you know what? These are some of the growing pains, and defenses are definitely starting to scout him now. I don't think there was necessary. Well, there obviously wasn't film on him, but I don't think he was a big part of opponents' game plans coming into facing the Cavs before. And now the book's kind of out on him, and we're seeing him kind of make adjustments in real time and figure out ways to get to the rim effectively and finish over length. So it's a bit of a process. What's your thoughts been of Sexton's play of late?
Well, I'd like to start this off by saying what I'm not going to do, and I'm not going to lose my shit at Larry Drew for not playing Colin Sexton down the stretch of the fourth quarter. Yeah, it's like it'd be better if he was out there getting the reps, but dude, it's okay to try to win one game every now and again. Like, I'm not sitting here worrying that Colin Sexton's development has been immeasurably.
I don't think he's ever going to recover. I think that's a wrap on him.
You check Twitter sometimes and you see that. Like, can't believe they're not playing. It's like, dude, it's fine. It's one game. You're going to play 60 more of these things.
My reaction to it was basically, that's interesting. Huh. And I didn't think of it again.
You know, my reaction was, Larry's trying to win the game. Because he wasn't playing very well, and that's okay.
Yeah. He made some mistakes in the last couple minutes there.
And took a couple bad shots. I mean, I think what we're seeing is we saw the very, very high end of what the jumper could look like when it was going, like what his game looks like when the jumper's going. Now we're seeing what it looks like when the jumper is pretty icy. The last three games specifically, it hasn't looked very good. He's not getting to the line very much, not getting a ton of threes up. And the lines have been predictably ugly. I'm not going to lose a lot of sleep about it. I just think he's got to keep learning. And, you know, this is – it's not supposed to be linear. It's almost like provisional. Like, defenses will give you as much respect as you deserve at the time. So it's like – so he was getting no respect at the beginning, figured that out, started doing a little bit better. Now he's getting a little more respect and attention, a little TLC in the game plan. Now he's stinking again. So he's got to figure that out. And then once he figures that out, the defenses will throw another wrinkle at him.
And that happens with all players, like not even just rookies. When a guy is adding something or responsibilities to their game, there's a learning curve. There's adjustments that the defense makes and we're seeing that with Jetty as well. When he had added responsibilities, he's gone through cold stretches where he struggled, and the defenses are expecting different things from him. So it's all about the adjustments you make from there. And I don't know if you feel this way, but I truly feel like Sexton is playing better than I would have expected with no Kevin Love there. Like I thought,
good way to put it.
To be successful was so dependent on Kevin Love, in my opinion, coming into this season, that I'm impressed still with I'm impressed with the mistakes he's making, because I think that they're in the process. They're in a good process in towards working towards the right things. And I like the adjustments that I've seen so far from him.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he's starting to figure stuff out. I think if you're looking at things he really needs to improve, especially going into next season, handle's just not as tight as I want it to be. He gets ripped a lot.
George Hill to his handle, eh?
Yeah, just it's like a little bit of a – that's you've never aided before, you Canadian bastard.
I try to hide my Canadian Tourette's, but it came through there.
Wow. Yeah, like he just is a little. I think what it is he's not used to guys being able to slide their feet with him, even giving him space. And so he kind of goes into their chest a lot, and there's like this collision, and then he gets loose with the ball. So he's got to work on that. And then obviously, like, just change the diet of the shots he's taking. But in fairness, I don't really know if I want that guy taking pull up threes right now. Like, those pull up 15 footers.
No, he doesn't have the strength to do that right now.
Yeah, for him, that's actually probably a better points per possession shot. I know analytics people aren't going to want to hear that, but, you know, it doesn't mean you can't get out there. I mean, that was the Kemba progression, right? I'm not saying he's Kemba, but that's kind of where I stand. I think he's doing fine. I think he obviously could be doing better. There's obvious deficiencies, especially still as a passer. I mean, he's starting to look for that that far corner three out of the pick and roll, and he needs to find that guy when the defender sags off to tag the roller. But he's learning. That's all you can ask, is that he's learning.
Yeah, I don't want him taking tons of pull-up threes right now. I'd rather see growth in his playmaking and just see some diversity in how he gets to the rim or what moves he does to go up. Because it's clear defenders are still kind of reading it, and he's just so used to, as you said, just being by guys immediately with his athleticism that I think he's still learning that, okay, sometimes NBA defenders are able to cover that ground or there's going to be help waiting for me, and I need to do other things to figure out how to score efficiently at the rim. Because he's definitely got the speed, and that was one of the most important things, was that his speed translates and he jumps off the screen when he plays. And I think we're still at that territory, even when he struggles, that I'm happy to see him check into the game, and I'm interested to see what he's doing, when that definitely wasn't the case earlier in the season.
Yep. I would tend to agree. I mean, it's obviously been a little rough last couple games, but doesn't mean it can't get better. I'm not going to lose my shit about him not playing well. I'm also not going to lose my shit about Larry Drew picking his spots on when to play him.
I'm also I'm okay with his struggle games coming a little more on the weekend, because I'm less sober and I'm just remembering like the good moves rather than the struggles.
That's fair. Can't disagree with that, though.
The,
I am
the weekday sober eye is not the best thing for his
games. That's fair. Speaking of someone who you don't really want to watch sober right now, I did want to hit on him before we kind of stopped running through the roster. Your boy Ante Zizic not looking much like an NBA player this season.
Okay, Carter, before you continue, I was really worried that you're going to say Tristan going out drunk in New York after this game.
No, I am not worried about that at all. Reward yourself, big man.
Go get another double-double. Zizic has... he's not someone that I'm really stressing about how to get him minutes right now. I'm going to be honest, Carter.
No. He's looking like a stiff. You know what it is he just has very he's just the most easily ripped player in the history of basketball. like every time he gets a post-up, someone pokes the ball out. It's like, dude, you just got to hold on to it a little tighter. Like, I'm not here to tell him that that's how he could fix his entire game, but it could fix like 40% of the problems he's had in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it almost goes back to like what you're told in high school as a post player, like, hey, hold the ball up, hold it tight, hold it higher, because he's almost got it in that bottom pocket there, and that's where guards
can come from behind. Every time he faces up or goes into his move, that's what's happening. He's bringing the ball down.
Yeah, and honestly, that's a little bit of like what Jonas Valanciunas struggled with when he first came to the league, was he'd always bring the ball down and he'd get it ripped and he'd get it stolen. And now it's almost comical that when he gets the ball high, he like keeps his arms fully extended and keeps going with it. But I think that would do Zizic a lot of good. I mean, he's got touch. He has footwork. And those are positives and things that you can't necessarily teach as well. And he's always going to have.
I love that overcorrection by Valanciunas. I want to watch that now.
Please do. It's hysterical.
Fun little young Carter fact. When I was little, I couldn't say my R's, which is a tough thing when your name's Carter Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a speech therapist when I was in like third grade or whatever. Hey, and the way they teach you to say your R's is you have to, so when you make an R noise, your tongue goes to the roof of your mouth and a little bit back.
Mm.
So they taught me to do it by basically I had to like hyper exaggerate my R's. So I had to just say, my name is Carter Rodriguez. And my brother used to make fun of me. And it was like, Nate, I'm trying to get better here, you dick.
I'm picturing you basically like punching the chiclets from with your tongue at the top of your mouth.
Yeah. Oh, that's functionally you had to way overcorrect, but it's better than Caldo Rodriguez, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
So
I think our podcast would be a little more interesting if that was the case, though.
It would. I think it'd be less endearing at age 28. so the moral of the story is, I get you, Jonas. I get you.
But yeah, to finish up on Zizic, because we probably shouldn't go too long on him. And
nope,
I think to do so will lead to more kind of anecdotes and getting sidetracked. He's always going to have a ceiling because of his lack of mobility and the very, very slim likelihood that he's going to be a passable defensive player. But his offensive skill set will, at the very least, give him a shot at kind of sticking in the league, and hopefully he can kind of make some of those small corrections, because those are just mistakes
not strong
he's able to avoid. Yeah, he doesn't. It's not going to be that difficult to avoid them. He just kind of has to figure that out.
Yeah, I would agree. He's got to get stronger. Got to improve the things that are obvious deficiencies in his game. He's been really bad this year, especially in this stretch where he kind of could have cut himself a space in the rotation. But that doesn't mean it's over for him. But it's been a little ugly.
Yeah, it has been. Oh God, Joe Vardon. he had tweeted that Sexton didn't play the fourth quarter.
You're gonna get us in trouble with the fucking tweet, dude. I saw that immediately and was like, God damn it, Justin.
I'll take it.
Scratch Vardon off the list.
Well, I mean, he's never gonna come on the podcast.
He's never gonna come on the podcast. Does he follow you?
No.
Yeah, I don't think he's followed anyone in the blogger beat.
No, I think we're kind of in the clear. I think we can make fun of him as much as we want. But, yeah, said that Sexton didn't play the fourth quarter, but he played 3 or 4 minutes there. So he corrected that.
We know what his final thoughts are going to be about. Let's just say that.
Yeah. It'll be very positive, I'm sure.
Our career in Cleveland media is fucked.
Well, that's always been my goal, is to drag you down. Yeah, from afar, because
I'll be all right.
Well, that's good. What else? So we got Billy Preston cut.
Rip in peace.
Yeah, I enjoyed. I went to basically every reporter that like tweeted it out just to see kind of what the reactions were, and it was amazing to see how upset people were. And I'm sure a lot of people haven't really followed since Summer League, but here's your Billy Preston update. He hasn't proven that he is a G League level player yet. He does not start for the Charge. He has been awful for the Charge. Doesn't really get a lot of minutes. Struggles in the minutes that he does get. And I don't think this is going to be one of those decisions that comes back and haunts the Cavs.
That dude was among the worst players I've ever wanted to be good in the history of life. Holy shit! I just searched him on Twitter. And there's a screen grab from Summer League or preseason or something like that. And it's him shooting. And it is not far off from the famous Michael Kidd-Gilchrist jumper form.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
His elbow is so far out. I'm retweeting it right now. Oh, my God. Yeah, he couldn't dribble. He couldn't shoot. He actually wasn't that athletic. He wasn't fast.
Yeah. And we've known that he has problems driving, too.
Yeah. that's a good joke.
Thank you.
He was I wanted to believe, Justin. I wanted to believe, but within 3 seconds of seeing him check into that first Summer League game, I was like, nope.
Are you going to miss Andrew Harrison at all?
I actually, man, you know, pour one out for old Andy, because I thought he was a perfectly fine backup point guard for the 2 weeks we needed him.
Yeah, he was fine for like the first few games, and then by the end, I was pretty okay with seeing him go. I was.
I mean, he's a two-way player. What do you?
Yeah, and George Hill comes back. There's just no point in having him, right? He's basically there just to fill in for that injury.
Yeah, and I'm fine with it. I mean, he made a good effort, ran the team moderately well, had one really nice Euro step, I think, against the Rockets. What can he ask for?
Yeah, that was his one shining moment. And
let's just say we're not getting the best two-way players.
No, I think that's a fair assessment. Do you have anything, any thoughts on either Jones or Blossom Game? Blossom Game, what a name. I was, the puns are too obvious with that one, but man, that's a hell of a last name. I'm intrigued by him just for that reason.
CC, very intrigued. No, I don't have any thoughts on either of them.
Okay. Did you know either of them existed prior to this?
Yeah, Blossom Game, I think, went to Clemson or something like that.
Yeah,
see, I used to cover college sports for work, but I still don't know shit about him. Ask me what position Jaren Blossom Game plays, Justin.
What position does Jaren Blossom Game play?
I don't know.
Well,
kind of professionalism you get out of me.
Yeah, if you guys are coming to chase down for two-way analysis, this probably ain't it for you.
But I'd love to direct you to Locked On Cavaliers, where Chris Manning has probably done a very nice job getting everyone prepared for this.
Yeah, good old Chris. He watches the Charge. He actually knows what's going on there. So if you want snarky commentary,
he's a professional in every way. We're not.
And that poor bastard has to manage us.
Mm-hmm.
Poor guy. What else? So we mentioned Tristan Thompson.
We should have done a mailbag. You've had to say what else 9 times.
Well, I guess how about we're doing a Joe Vardon impression? We don't know what to talk about when the Cavs come off a win. Tristan Thompson is playing really great after struggling. Tristan's playing great after struggling against OKC. Is he an all-star?
Yeah, I mean, OKC is. Of course not. Come on.
Man,
he's great.
He's an all-star in my heart.
Yeah, can we do this thing where we just love someone and not set ourselves up to look like morons to everyone else?
But I'm good at it, Carter. It's one of my two strengths.
Imagine coming to the Twitter at large and trying to sell that. We're going to get laughed out of the room, and we're already getting laughed out of the room.
Yeah. I remember I was campaigning for him to win Sixth Man of the Year in the Mozgov year. And it's pretty funny that the Cavs, they said that they were going to do the alternating starting centers based on matchups, but that pretty much went out the window.
Yeah, he started looking like
himself again.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to take Thompson out. He's the leader of this team vocally. I mean, you actually see it a little bit more, don't you? Like him actually like taking a vocal role in the huddle and like in between plays when there's a dead ball, like, it's been kind of fun to see.
Yeah, his game isn't necessarily something that translates well to conversation and stuff like that. Like, I think the leadership angle is the kind of most compelling thing with Tristan because, as we've mentioned before, he's an energy guy, 4 straight finals, and how he was going to react to being on a losing situation is it was up in the air, and he's really, really stepped up in that leadership role. I mean, you see it on the court too. Like, he was always one of the most vocal players even before LeBron left too. Like, he was the only player that seemed to be allowed to yell back at LeBron. Like, LeBron was harsh to him, but he was also yelling at LeBron half the time. And to see him always kind of getting in guys' ears, Jetty Osman, when he made a nice play going to the rim, Tristan was kind of patting him on the head and telling him what to do and giving instruction out there. So it's really nice to see. Like, that's what you want from your veteran guys. And that was something that the Cavs didn't have post-decision. was a veteran that actually has done something and been around for success and is willing to take part in that role. He didn't. He hasn't gone full Antoine Jameson.
Yeah, and we were kind of saying before the year, remember, that this was going to have to be a team of tryhards.
Yeah.
That would have to be the identity of the team. And, like, I do actually think that is the identity of the team. I think this team pretty much, with a few rare exceptions, like, their issues do not arise from a lack of effort or spirit. Like, I kind of can't believe the extent to which they haven't packed it in. Like, they really do seem to try to win every single game. Now, it doesn't always work because their talent is very low, especially with when Hill and Love were out. Still without Love, I mean, it's a pretty bleak picture. And also a poor fit, a lot of specialists, a lot of weird age mixes, but effort's really not been the issue. And I think that's been kind of nice to see. Like, I think I needed the little 2-game winning streak just to stoke some hope in my heart. And ever since, I've kind of like recontextualized the season. I'm like, you know what? This team is not as bad to watch as they could have been.
Yeah, it makes it considerably easier to watch, even when they're losing, when there just isn't 24, 30 minutes where the team is just kind of going through the motions. Like, you can tell they're working on something every minute of the game, and that makes things a lot easier to process. And then you get nice to, like, tonight, where you get a game-winning dunk. The team is competing, but even in that Toronto loss, like, the Cavs really hung around there, and they kept competing until the end. And credit to Larry Drew, because it's not easy to keep players motivated, and we don't know how long this is going to last, but it's December. The Cavs are clearly one of the worst teams in the league, if not the worst, and they're still going out there, and they're trying every minute. So even though
To be clear, when I say not bad to watch, I mean for the fans. For everyone else, it's horrible to watch because no one likes untalented tryhards. it's not too bad.
Yeah, I mean, this is the type of team that Brad Stevens dreams he had, but it's not the team that I envision for the future, but it makes it easier for the time being.
Yeah, I would agree. And yeah, I kind of just like these guys. I like that they try hard. I like that they are figuring stuff out. I like that they seem to like each other.
That's nice. I mean, that's one of those things that probably isn't too meaningful, but it is still nice from a fan's perspective.
It's part of the fan experience, man.
Yeah, it really is. And it's funny, J.R. Smith's comment about the team not trying to win, like that they're going out there and not giving effort, like that almost seems like a bit of a turning point. I don't know if it was just getting him out of the locker room that kind of helped the atmosphere and the team's ability to get along. But I think at the same time, just his comment there, it might be a coincidence, but the team has had a more sustained effort since that point. And as you said, that's when they had the 2-weekend wins there over Philly and Houston. So it's certainly more manageable. And personally, I'm kind of counting down the weeks until Kevin Love comes back.
I can't wait.
I have some nervous energy about whether or not they're actually going to keep him, because I'd like to see them keep him. And I think that's the most likely outcome. But there is some doubt that has kind of creeped in.
That's fair. Can I briefly go off on something that rankles me?
I'll allow it.
We're hurting for content. Deal with it.
Well, I was actually considering mentioning that, but I was like, you know what? You'll probably give me shit for that. But you go on, Carter. Rant away.
I don't like that we have this wide, stupid, broad definition for the word tanking, and it all means the same thing. It all means the very worst thing. How are the Cavs tanking? Just because they suck? Like, it's like every team that sucks now, we just say they're tanking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, they're trying to win. Like, I know what tanking looks like. I went to a Pacers game, I think the third year of Kyrie's tenure, where they were competing. They were like down 2. And Byron Scott didn't put him in until like the 3-minute mark of the fourth quarter because he was doing too well. That's tanking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Trading
Kyle Korver, who is 37 years old, to a contender for additional flexibility and for a guy who can play, by the way, in Alec Burks. Like, I just don't know, like, what is your, like, do you think the Cavs are tanking? That just seems like the wrong word.
Yeah. Look,
I think no one just is comfortable saying sucks. They suck. That's okay.
Yeah. And trading.
It doesn't have to be this negative, like, malicious thing.
And trading Korver for Burks and 2 second round picks, like, that wouldn't be a move that would necessarily, like, even really surprise me a whole lot, even if they were trying to win. Like, that's, you got a younger player. You got some athleticism. Like, that would be the thing that we could kind of talk ourselves into last year if it happened.
Yeah. Tanking is not playing Kevin Love if he's healthy. Like, that's tanking. I get that. Tanking is taking out a player who's playing well because he might accidentally win you a game.
Right. Like,
what the Cavs Lakers did with their 8th overall pick for Jordan Clarkson so they could try to win a game tonight. Like, it just drives me a little crazy because it's like, people act like they're doing this on purpose. It's like, guys, they're just trying their best. Like it just feels so unnecessarily cynical.
Right. And I mean, so much of the analysis and conversation around the league is just an echo chamber, right? Like, well,
yeah, no one's watching, in fairness, no one should.
Yeah. So you're just going to go with whatever the popular narrative is, right? And the Cavs are just a team that's short on talent. They seem to be trying. And because of the lack of talent, they are going to lose most nights. But as we said, they're working towards some good things. We have positives here with Colin Sexton, and Jetty Osman has had his moments as well. So I don't think it's necessarily super bleak, but it's not like it's over tanking. It's not what the Sixers were doing. And
I just don't know what people wanted from them. Well, were they supposed to play 37-year-old Kyle Korver 35 minutes a game? Would that have made them not be tanking? I just don't know, man.
If they weren't so tanking, cynical. They'd be trading for Carmelo Anthony to help get them over the hump. They should be buyers.
I would love it. I would love to see that man have to play the rest of the year in Cleveland.
Now, him in Cleveland, I think, would be what people anticipated with Baron Davis, because everyone thought when he got traded to Cleveland, he was just going to get even fatter and fall off. And he really kind of made a point to prove that he still had something left. I think Carmelo Anthony would just he'd be enjoying Cleveland's food scene, and I think that's about it. Like that he'd man,
be a pierogi guy.
He'd go the Sean Kemp way. Fat Sean Kemp.
Yeah, you know how I feel about this. Carmelo's on the all gonna be fat when he retires team.
I feel like he's going to be fat, and he's also going to be great at commentary. Like,
yeah, he's going to be Chuck at his largest.
You can
see it right now. You're picturing it.
Yeah, I'm actually picturing Carmelo fat in a bathrobe like he was at that bodega on set of TV, just talking shit.
That's awesome.
Well, Instagram live with like cryptic posts, because he's a banana boat guy. So you have to kind of put all those headings and the descriptions as some sort of subliminal shot to somebody.
our friend
good old Matt Carmelo. Well, that's
that's it for you.
It's not over until the fat.
That's out. It's over now.
Yeah, it's not over until the fat Carmelo sings. So, Carter, I think this is another one that is certainly in the books. We will have much more to talk about. You're not going to be here, though, on Wednesday, right?
I'm not. I'm going to Vegas for the week for work. So you will have to find an able replacement for me.
Yeah. So for those that wondered if Carter's going to have to pretend whether or not he's watching a game on Wednesday, he will not.
Your ass.
Well, Carter, I'm going to miss you. You have fun in Vegas. Don't lose all of don't lose all the podcast money. Don't blow our entire budget there, man, because I plan on living off that.
Okay, that's fair. I can handle that.
Okay, good. Well, I want to give a thanks to our listeners. You guys have been awesome. We're having a lot of fun still, even with the team sucking in our Discord chat. Remember, if you want to be a part of that, if you leave a review on iTunes, you can send a screenshot of that to chasedownpod@gmail.com. Or if you don't feel like talking to us, which is certainly understandable, we would still appreciate if you supported the podcast by leaving a rating and a review. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. You can basically find us wherever you get your podcasts. So until next time, go Cavs.